Hello, this is the Conversations Politics podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. We're down in Victoria to do some interviews for the Victorian election, which is on Saturday week. We've talked to Gay Alcorn, the Melbourne editor of The Guardian, Bob Brown, the former Federal Greens leader who's flown into town to help with the local campaign for the Greens, and Brian Costa, Professor of Political Science at Swinburne University and a long-time Victorian politics watcher. Gay Alcorn is the Melbourne editor of Guardian Australia, and she's been closely following the Victorian contest. Gay Alcorn, less than 2 weeks from the election, is Victoria in for a change of government, do you think?
All the polls, Michelle, suggest that Victoria may well change the government and become a Labor government, which would be significant because we haven't had a one-term government in Victoria since 1955, the Great Split. So it's an important election for that in that regard. The latest news poll in The Australian was showing that Labor is ahead by 54% to 46% on a two-party preferred.
Very comfortable, isn't it?
Very comfortable. Some of the other polls are a little tighter, 52-48. The Fairfax poll is showing about the same as the news poll. The important thing, talking to people who know about these issues, is that since 2012, Labor has been ahead of the coalition, except for a little spike when Dennis Napthine took over from Ted Bailey. So if you look at it for the last couple of years, unless things tighten up a lot in the next couple of weeks, Labor is heading for a comfortable win. The Liberals are saying we think things are going to tighten up, but it hasn't happened yet.
Some people say it's rather lumpy, that swings are different in different places. Do you get that impression?
Absolutely. If you look at where the leaders are going, they're really focused on about 8-10 seats. And again, both parties are saying that the contests are different in those seats than perhaps that the statewide polls are showing. A lot of focus on Ballarat. They seem to go there every second day. There's some tight seats there. And in what Victoria calls the sandbelt seats, four seats along the Frankston line, which did swing to the Liberals at the 2010 election. And there's an enormous amount of contest for those seats as well. So there's a few others also. And it's difficult, really, when you just look at the state polls to know exactly how well the local candidates and the grassroots campaign are going in those crucial seats.
What are the issues that are cutting through?
There's the standard state issues, but they are playing out in interesting ways. There's education, health, jobs, transport, and then you go down the line a little bit with law and order and environment and so and else other issues. The interesting things with these issues are that, and what's come up in a couple of times in this election, is that they're issues now that the states in some ways don't have full control over. The unemployment rate in Victoria is 6.8%, the highest in any state except Tasmania. That's a real worry about what's going to happen with the car industry. The manufacturing industry is in decline. But there's no real acknowledgement by the local parties here that they haven't got a great deal of control about that. That is a national issue. It's had a lot to do with the high Australian dollar and the decisions on the car industry. So there's this strange tension, I think, between what state governments can actually achieve and what they'll promise to achieve. They can't necessarily fix everything, but there are programs that are announced every day and a hope that at least they can do some things in these critical areas. The other, I think, interesting issue which has meat on it is East-West Link, which is a cross-city toll road, which is very controversial. The Liberals, that's the centrepiece of their transport policy, and Labor has said they won't go ahead with it, quite controversially, after earlier saying they would abide by the contracts. That issue, I think, underneath it, is about the future of the city. The city's growing, Melbourne's growing faster than any other capital city. The infrastructure hasn't kept pace with that. So there's a debate about, well, do we want how can we fix this, and is the East-West Link a very important way to do it, or do we want to say we're going to put the balance further on public transport, which is what Labor is saying? But yes, that's really about the future of Melbourne and how do we cope with the enormous growth.
And what do you think the majority of people think in that debate? Are they going for public transport or the East-West Link?
Very interesting. The most recent polls on East-West Link seem to show that people support it, but if you look at other polls that actually put it up against more more funding for public transport, it tends to edge the other way. But I don't think it's a simple question with the East West. I think a lot of people think we just have to have that. There's an absolute gridlock when people get off one link and try to get on the other. But it's unpopular in the inner city areas. On the outer city areas trying to get through and cross the city, it's much more popular. So it is a divisive issue.
The federal budget played very badly in Victoria and knocked the more popular Victorian budget off the radar, as it were. Do you think that there's an anti-Abbott factor that's big in this election? Is Labor sending a message to Canberra? Is that resonating at all?
They are trying. I mean, traditionally, as you know, Australians tend to distinguish between state issues and federal issues. But, and I don't know how much it's going to play out in the election in the end, but it is a factor here. Victoria's a very progressive state, so the Liberals here tend to be really small. They're Liberal. Dennis Napthine did not support the proposed changes to the Racial Discrimination Act, for instance, very strongly multicultural. So it's a different... But it's a different mood here in terms of what liberalism is. And certainly when Tony Abbott has been here a couple of times, Dennis Napthine has looked very awkward.
Hug was a bad look.
The hug was a bad look. And he also came just before the launch, and Tony Abbott did not attend the official launch, just before he turned up and said, "This is all a referendum on East-West Link." And I could see Napthine cringing because he doesn't want to make it a referendum on East-West Link. And this is really the first state election since the federal budget, which was unpopular around the country. But if you look at the polls, Tony Abbott and the federal government has really dropped off support in Victoria. So it's hard to tell if people will distinguish between those issues at the end, but Labor is certainly playing it up that let's have at least a Labor government in a state to counter some of the unpopularity of the federal government.
And what about the leaders themselves? What have their performances been like, and what are they like as political personalities?
Well, neither of them, you'd have to say, are inspiring, dynamic figures. They're both solid, though. I mean, my own view, and the polling seems to indicate this too, is that Napthine is their best asset for the coalition. He's I've described him as having a daggy charm. He's a former country vet, really personable, speaks well, you know, to everyone, you know, whatever they do for a living. And Daniel Andrews, who you may be aware at some point tried to change his name to Dan, and there's been a little bit of a question about who is this man. He's not well known. He's got a history of mostly a Labor Party staffer and so on. But I think he's warmed to the role. Campaigning, he seems to be quite enjoying it. So I think they're both doing fairly well, but not, you have to say, not brilliantly, not in an inspiring way.
Now, the upper house is quite interesting, isn't it? At the moment, the government controls the upper house, but how's that contest looking?
It is starting to look, Michelle, that we might have a situation like the federal Senate in Victoria, which would be chaotic. What we've got is a lot more parties standing this time. The micro-minor parties have been doing intense preference negotiations in the last couple of weeks, and we now know what their preference deals are. The Palmer United Party is standing in the upper house, and the Greens and Labor have been going at it hammer and tongs. The Greens tried to do a preference swap with Labor, and Labor said no. So Labor has given some preferences in some areas to PUP and the DLP even above the Greens. The Greens have done a deal with PUP. So we don't know how that's going to play out, but it's possible we could get a DLP upper house member or Greens or one of the other sort of micro parties, depending on how all that falls, that no one can quite predict.
So you think that whichever way the election goes, the new government will not control the upper house?
Well, that's hard to say. There's a good prospect that they won't control the upper house. The Greens who are polling quite well at the moment, about 16%, but that may come back. They are certainly aiming to get the upper house balance of power. But you do have all these other players here who've done deals with everyone else. Extremely difficult to predict, but it's certainly on the cards that we'll have a much more chaotic upper house.
Is there any real prospect of the Greens getting a lower house seat?
Well, I think there is a prospect. Adam Bandt won the federal seat of Melbourne at the last federal election, even though the Liberals preferenced against them. What happened in the last state election is the Greens had a good chance in some inner city Labor seats, basically, except for a surprise announcement by the Liberal Party that they were not going to preference the Greens, and that really crueled their chances. What the Greens are saying now is that Adam Band has proven that you can win despite that, which is true, but it's a lot harder for them. They also tend to talk up their chances, I think, at every election, which is, you know, understandable. And it's not clear whether they will get over the line. They're looking at Melbourne. They've got a very impressive candidate there. They're looking at Richmond. They're also going after a Liberal seat in Prahran, which is another inner city seat. And they think they've got a chance in those inner city seats, but it's hard for them.
How do you think the pup party's going? Clive Palmer has been down here a couple of times campaigning, I think. Do you feel they're on the wane and that the Victorian result will show that, or are they travelling reasonably?
Clive Palmer has been here and has been a colourful intervention in the campaign, because he didn't announce candidates until, you know, a few days ago, and they have no real policies. And you'd think that the federal chaos might influence it. The other thing is that Victoria really did not vote for PUP at the last federal election, much, much lower vote here than in Queensland, for instance. But because of the preference deal with the Greens in the upper house, that started to, you know, give them a bit of energy, I think. So it's possible they might win an upper house seat, but really they haven't run an intense campaign. I presume there's been a lot of distractions in Canberra.
No sign of Jackie Lambie on the hustings.
There was some talk about her arriving on the hustings, but I don't know where that's happened. So there's been some, you'd have to say, fairly bizarre press conference where nothing's really announced, and although freedom's going to reign and so forth in Victoria, according to Clive.
If there is a change of government, what implications do you think that will have for national politics?
Well, normally, journalists often overplay this, I think, and say, you know, if a government loses, this has massive national implications. And, yeah, I often think that it's not as much as people say. But it's not good for the Abbott government, you'd have to say. It's the first election, I think, since the budget came down. You had Tasmania and South Australia before that. And it's a big state. It's a big, important state that would have swung. The cycle starts to swing back, you know, from Liberals holding most of the governments in the country. And it'd be a sign that there's a swing back. No doubt they'd say, well, look, you know, this government in Victoria has been a little chaotic. It's been very hard for them with a hung parliament towards the end, the chaos of a maverick Jeff Shaw. There's been some local factors, and there always are some local factors. But it would be a negative sign, I think, for the
and it gives
government.
It gives Labor a bit of a base to try to rebuild, doesn't it, nationally?
Absolutely, it does. And as I said, I think there are if the Naphthine government does lose, there are a lot of things that they've done wrong that you could point to, but you can see them already when you talk to them, blaming slightly the Abbott government that he's not really welcome here. They think that is a factor. The announcement just before the election began about the fuel rise did not go down well here at all. The other issue in Victoria is that there is a view amongst the Conservatives that Victorians aren't well represented in the cabinet, that the Victorian issues, whether it's support for SPC, you know, fruit company, or whether it's support for car manufacturing, is just not being pushed through the cabinet.
Well, there's no Victorian in the leadership group, and of course, in previous times there were usually very strong Victorians, even if not a leader. Peter Costello, for example, deputy.
Absolutely, and that is something that the Conservatives who talk about here, that Victoria isn't well enough represented. But you have to say, if they do lose, there are enough local factors that they could look at themselves.
Everyone will have their own explanation. Yes. Gail Corn, thank you very much for talking with us. Bob Brown, former federal leader of the Greens, is back on the campaign trail in Victoria. Bob Brown, how does it feel?
Oh, it feels great. There's a good feeling in the air. The Greens are going very well. I'm out in Prahran at the moment with Sam Hibbins, who's a great candidate. Three good things you've got to have for an election campaign: good policies, good candidates, and a feeling of enthusiasm. And all those are in Victoria like I haven't seen, actually, since the formation of the Greens back in the 1990s. It's a very good feeling here, I think, because both the old parties are on the nose.
You've got three seats here in the upper house at the moment. What are your hopes and expectations, taking a conservative view?
Well, I'm conservative, of course, and I think potentially looking at the averaging of the polls, I was talking with Greg Barber, who's one of those upper house members this morning. Five seats. I think there's a good chance for a sixth upper house seat, and two or three in the lower house. And Michelle, that's a big breakthrough. As you know, Adam Bandt took Melbourne in the House of Representatives two elections ago, and then held it in the elections last year. And Ellen Sandel is the Greens candidate in Melbourne. Right next door is Kathleen Moultzahn, and other seats, which are components of Adam Bandt's bigger seat of Melbourne. The state seats are smaller, but they're very green, and the polls actually have the Greens ahead in those seats. We're not seeing much of that in the media, but Labor and Liberal, of course, are cross-preferencing, effectively. I guess it's up to the voters, but the Greens have got a very good show of winning, for the first time in history, lower house seats.
And the main issues from your point of view?
Transport. The Greens are very strong on public transport, but not the very unpopular tunnel proposal that the government is now supporting, using taxpayers' money. There'll be a lot of that, but a lot of houses going west and disruption to the urban amenity. Labor's somewhere on the fence over it. It's going to take perhaps... we'll see after the election action on it. The Greens are very clear there will be no tunnel if elected. Another one that's come very late is the Great Forest National Park, just north of Melbourne, where the critically endangered mountain ash forest and Victoria's state emblem, the Leadbeater's possum, both facing extinction. That national park supported by the Greens, but not by either of the big parties. And that's the sort of issue that becomes a vote turner as you go to the election. It very much defines the Greens as against both the big parties, which want logging.
Do you think there'll be a change of government? And if so, what are the implications of that federally?
Michelle, the polls are showing that, but you can't be sure. You wouldn't know what the government, for example, will have in store in the last week or two. They're going to be very important. But the Greens are polling higher than ever before. And balance of power by Ellen Sandel from Melbourne or one of her co-candidates winning seats is very, very high in the probability. And here's an interesting thing. Most Victorians want to see a Green-Labor coalition at the moment. Well, not a coalition, but at least a get-together, because they want to see some restraint on the older parties, and they like what the Greens are offering.
They weren't put off by the Green-Labor get-together federally?
Well, not at all. And the polls show that federally the Greens are going along strongly at the moment. Of course, climate change is overarching all of this, and the people know that the Greens are very strong on that. Tony Abbott believes that coal is good for humanity. I don't think too many Victorians will be wanting that, and I think he's a dampener currently on the coalition's chance of returning to government here in Victoria. But, you know, you get after many years, you get a feeling for mood. And certainly here in Melbourne, and I've been in regional Victoria as well, the mood is very good for the Greens.
Bob Brown, thanks very much. Brian Costa is Professor of Political Science at Swinburne University and a long-time observer of Victorian politics. Brian Costa, why are we looking at the probable defeat of a first-term government in Victoria, which is the first time in this state since the mid-50s?
I think the problem goes right back to 2010. I don't believe that the coalition thought they were going to win the election. The opinion polls were pro-Labor until the Friday night beforehand, which was terribly unusual. My information is that the government didn't have a transition to government strategy, that they really wasted the first year or so. They were in first gear and never really got out of that. And I think while the federal issues of leadership tended to block this out, we've got to remember that a Premier was removed in office. I mean, Ted Baillieu was defeated by Dennis Napthine. I mean, he resigned because of internal pressure. Now, at the time, people said, oh, that's because his opinion poll ratings were low and he wasn't really doing much. But there was also a factional element in that. Ted Baillieu, of course, is a small L liberal. And there are a number of people brought into that parliament in 2010 who are not small L liberals. And they objected to his Hamer-like governing style and removed him.
Do you think it would have made any difference if Ted Baillieu had stayed on? Do you think the government would be better or worse off?
No, I don't think it would, because I think the problems really were that the party, the coalition parties, just weren't ready for government. They didn't think they were going to get there. And it just took them very long to start implementing policies. And I think that was a malaise that descended on the government, and it just didn't lift.
Now, Daniel Andrews seems to still be relatively unknown in the electorate. Does this matter? Are people concerned about voting for someone that they're not quite sure of?
It's certainly true that Daniel Andrews doesn't have a high profile. Some people say, well, that's good because that means he's not accident prone. In Victoria, popularity of leader is much less important in state elections than popularity of party. I mean, let's remember, way back in 1992, Joan Kerner was much more popular than Jeff Kennett, but that didn't stop the Labor Party being defeated in a landslide because the coalition parties were much more popular than Labor. So I don't think in this case that leadership is going to make the difference.
What sort of premier do you think he would make?
Oh, I think he'll be in the technocratic Labor mould. I mean, there's much made of the fact that he comes from the socialist left, but really, factions in the Victorian ALP now are more about strategy and power-seeking than they are about ideology. I think he will be in that modern Labourite state premier mould. I don't think you're going to get fire and brimstone, and it's not going to be terribly exciting. It will be very much a state Labor government of the modern type.
So how would he get on with a federal coalition government?
As badly as any Victorian government gets on with a federal coalition or Labor government. I mean, you know, there's a long history, of course, of Victoria being unhappy with federalism of the Australian type. This goes back, right back, of course, to 1942 when Victoria got a bad deal out of the taxation because the Country Party government at the time was such a low-taxing party that they just didn't get the federal revenue.
This is quite important, though, isn't it, at the moment, because Tony Abbott is trying to get going this review of federalism. So these federal-state issues will be quite central over the next 12 months or so.
Yes, I'm sure they will be, and they always are in Victoria. I'm not at all confident that we're going to get a renovation of the federal compact. I mean, we're talking again about new federalism. I mean, how many times have we talked about this? I mean, Richard Nixon started it in 1968. We've had about five or six variations in Australia, and none of them have come to much. I mean, you do have a fairly rigid constitution. That's how it is. And I think, you know, the two tiers of government are just going to have to live with it.
And in this state campaign, how much have you seen of the federal politicians on either side?
Well, almost nothing of the coalition side. I mean, Tony Abbott didn't even have a sleepover here. He was here for 5 minutes and disappeared and hasn't come back. And I don't think the Liberals want him back. The media reports early on were that way. They didn't want him here. We haven't seen much of Mr. Shorten either. It's been very much a state leader and state candidates campaign with very few ministers or shadow ministers, really, been prominent in the campaign at all.
I suppose we can explain Tony Abbott's absence by both his unpopularity here and also the fact he's been away a lot overseas. But if Labor is on a roll, one would have thought that Bill Shorten would have wanted to be in on the act to the maximum extent, surely.
Yes, I think he's doing it a bit below the radar of fundraising and local candidates. He hasn't really been prominent at all. In fact, one interesting thing is the print media in particular and electronic media to a lesser extent are hardly covering the election at all. I mean, the amount of print that you see in the press is very limited. For example, in the Herald Sun, which as we know is the state's biggest selling newspaper, at best you'll get two pages, most of which are taken up by pics, and they're usually around at pages 8, 9, 10 and 11. It's rare to get a front page story. I mean, the media seems to have just said, well, this election's over, let's do something else.
The impact of the federal budget on this election. Now, clearly when the budget came out, it was very unpopular, and that had a flow-through effect to Victoria because you had quite a popular budget from the state government down here. But is that impact still quite strong in the electorate, do you think?
Yes, I think it is. I mean, normally we all say that voters can separate federal and state issues, but of course the two big issues that are hitting here are health and education, and they're shared powers, as we all know. So the states and the Commonwealth have an interest. I think it was a clash of electoral cycles. I mean, the Napthine government is coming to the end of its cycle, so we get a budget which reflects this. I mean, it was a soft, generous budget. It wasn't extravagant, but it was soft and generous. But of course, it just got wiped away by the first year of the electoral cycle of the Abbott federal government, of course, doing all the tough things early. Now, on top of that, I mean, Victorians like their health and education. They're big issues here, and they're constantly coming out in the opinion polls as being two of the top three issues, with infrastructure in the form of transport being the third one, and they're not resolved. I mean, this is the problem, I think, that here we have, I think just yesterday, the federal government saying, well, we've got a couple of weeks to go in the federal parliamentary sitting, we're not putting up any of these contentious issues. So they're sitting there, unresolved, and Victorians have shown they don't like the federal initiatives in the area of health and education.
And, of course, you make the point that people do separate out federal and state elections, or can, but sometimes they don't want to. They want to send a message federally at a state election.
Yes, I think they do. I mean, we know that the Abbott government didn't get elected because they were particularly popular. They got elected because of the childish behaviour of the Labor Party over its leadership and other issues. And really, as we all know, that Abbott government has had no honeymoon. The federal opinion polls are dreadful for them, and in Victoria they're even more dreadful for them.
Now, what about the micro parties in this election? Of course, there's the Greens, but there's also the Palmer Party. What role do you think that these parties will have in the end?
Well, we've certainly seen a proliferation of minor parties. We've got 21 parties contesting this election as against 11 in 2010. Many of these parties we've never heard of before. They have weird and wonderful names. We don't know who their candidates are. Some of them don't even have leaders. Most of them don't have policies. I'm not talking about the Greens here. I'm talking about the micros.
I should have said the minor parties and the micro parties.
Yes, I think the Greens are polling very strongly. Now, we know that as we get closer to polling day and on polling day, the 17% that the Greens are polling at the moment will decline, probably to 13 or 14%. Now, if we didn't have all these micro parties running in the Legislative Council, then you'd say, well, the Greens will hold their three positions that they currently have. But we can't say that because we know what happened in 2013. We hear rumours of deals being done again, preference whisperers whispering to each other, so it's a bit tricky. The interesting thing, of course, is the Greens are very optimistic they'll finally win a Legislative Assembly seat in inner Melbourne. There are four seats there that they are interested in. I think their task is very hard. At the last election, the best they polled was 34%. Now, that's very good for the Greens, but again, they're not getting Liberal preferences. And I would have thought their primary vote would have to be up in the low 40s to get enough leakages of preferences from the Liberal How to Vote card. We know it will leak. It leaked last time. But it's a big ask. I would think their only chance is Melbourne. Now, for the micro parties, we just can't say. We know it's a proportional representation system, much like the Senate. There are eight Legislative Council regions or electorates, if we want to call them that. You've got five members. Now, we're pretty certain we can go through each of them and allocate the first four, but what do we do with the fifth place? We really don't have any idea. What is different in Victoria, of course, and Unfortunately, most voters don't know this because the political parties deliberately don't tell them, that if you venture below the line here in the Legislative Council, you don't have to fill out multiple squares like you had to do if you did it in the Senate last time. We have optional preferential voting here in the Legislative Council below the line. So to cast a valid vote, an elector only has to fill out five squares. Now, if they do that, they can go on and fill out more if they want, that they control where their preferences are going. Whereas we know that what happened in the Senate, if you 95% of people go above the line and just put one against the party of their choice, and what they're doing is they're endorsing that party's preference allocations, of which they know nothing. And that's how, of course, we got Senator Muir elected here in Victoria.
Results.
Yeah, they're random. It's Russian roulette, really. So we can't predict what's going to go on in the Legislative Council.
Now, just finally, Labor is doing much better at both federal and state level in Victoria than elsewhere, than in most other places in the country. Why do you think this is happening at the moment?
Well, it's been happening in Victoria since the late 1970s when the tide turned against the state and federal coalitions. Henry Bolte would be turning his grave to hear this, but Victoria is now the jewel in the Labor crown, not the jewel in the Liberal crown. I think this is the makeup of Victoria. It's much more multicultural. It's much better educated. I think education, it's starting to come to Australia in the same way that education is now an electoral determinant in the United States. That is, the higher education you have, the more likely you are to vote for centre-left parties. And I think that's the case in Victoria. We've for a long time had very high Year 12 retention rates. Victorians value education. And I think that's making the difference, that Victoria really has now become a much happier hunting ground for the Labor Party, which is ironic given its appalling performances from way back at the beginning of the 20th century until 1952, when it finally won government and then blew its brains out and lost government in 3 years' time and stayed out until 1982. There have been big changes here.
Interesting scene. Brian Costa, thanks very much for talking with us. That's all from our coverage of the Victorian election. It will be an interesting night Saturday week. Thank you to my producer, Matt Dawson. This is Michelle Grattan. We'll be back with more interviews soon.